The storm blew itself out during the night. The sky was still overcast the next morning, but the wind had died down and no more snow fell. During the blizzard, the wind had scoured the flatter terrain so that only an inch or two of snow remained on it. The white stuff had piled up in deep drifts, though, against rocks and other barriers. It had drifted against Jim Fowler's body during the night and eventually spilled over it, so that now the corpse appeared to be a long, white, low mound about 50 feet from the camp. Fowler had made it that far before collapsing. Morgan went out and brought in the body, dragging it by its heels. Abel Dean glared at him in hatred as he left Fowler's body sprawled under the bluff next to Hyde's corpse.
Damn it! At least you could bury them.
Or you can, if you want to try to dig a grave in this cold ground with your fingers. We didn't bring along a shovel.
Well, it just don't seem right to leave them for the wolves.
Wolves have to eat, too. And it may be a long, hungry winter.
What are you going to do with me?
I guess we'll have to take you with us. You'll have to walk, though, unless we happen to find the horses the three of you were riding. I'm hoping they pulled loose from wherever you tied them up last night, found some place to get in out of the storm. Hate to think about good horse flesh freezing to death for no good reason.
But you left Jim out there to freeze. He was a human being, not an animal.
That's debatable.
They got ready to ride. Morgan tied a length of rope from Dean's bound wrists to his saddle horn.
We'll turn you over to the law in Trinidad. To tell you the truth, I planned to kill you, but I reckon I'm not as cold-blooded as I thought I was.
You mean you don't have the guts?
Morgan turned and looked at Dean, who paled at what he saw in the younger man's eyes. Dean didn't say anything else. As long as they avoided the drifts, the going wasn't too hard. The horses had no trouble with a couple of inches of snow. There was no sign of the other horses, so Dean had to stumble along behind Morgan's horse. It would be a long walk to Trinidad for him, but it wouldn't kill him. Bearpaw found the trail that ran between Raton, New Mexico, and Trinidad, and the four of them headed north again. They would reach the settlement before the day was over.
When we get there, it'll be time for us to say so long.
Morgan looked over to Tasman.
You can't go with us after that.
I've held up my own end so far, haven't I? I'm the one who killed Hyde when he was about to beat you to a pulp.
And I appreciate that. But we weren't planning on those three jumping us like that. We know that once we leave Trinidad, we'll be riding into trouble.
I heard enough. Last night and back in Gallup, too, to know that you're hunting down a group of men. What did they do to you, kid?
It wouldn't change anything for you to know.
Dean called you Browning. Is that your real name?
I'm just Kid Morgan. That's all.
You're the stubbornest man I ever did see.
You'll be staying in Trinidad.
That ended the discussion. They stopped at midday to gnaw on some leftover biscuits and to let the horses rest. Morgan didn't untie Dean. The man sat on a log and glared at his captors as he ate. When they were almost ready to go, Morgan walked over to the buckskin. When he spun around, he saw that Dean had lunged up from the deadfall, gotten some slack in the rope that connected him to Morgan's saddle, and had whipped that slack around Tasman's neck from behind. She must have strayed too close to him. Morgan had warned her to keep her distance from the prisoner, but obviously she hadn't been careful enough about following that order.
Drop your guns! Drop them now or I'll choke her to death, I swear I will!
Take it easy!
Morgan didn't want the commotion to spook his horse. If the buckskin got nervous and bolted, even for a short distance, it would tighten that rope and squeeze the life out of Tasman in a matter of seconds.
Drop your guns and back away from him!
Bearpaw looked at Morgan, who nodded grimly.
Guess we better do what he says.
He eased his Colt from its holster and bent to place it on the snowy ground. A few yards away, Bearpaw did the same with the Sharps. The Paiute didn't carry a handgun.
The knife too, Redskin!
Bearpaw took his knife from its sheath and tossed it on the ground next to the Sharps. He and Morgan backed away from the weapons. Dean forced Tasman forward. Morgan knew that if Dean ever got his hands on a gun, the three of them were dead. The outlaw grinned and looked at Tasman.
You're not gonna bite me this time, you little bitch. I'll be lucky if I don't come down with hydrophobia being bit by a slut like you.
They reached Bearpaw's rifle and knife. Dean paused and bent down, trying to pick up the knife and keep the pressure on the rope around Tasman's neck at the same time. Morgan guessed he wanted to cut the rope so he'd be free from the horse. That was fine with Morgan. Dean might not realize it, but once he cut the rope, Tasman would be in less danger. Maybe then one of them could make a move. Morgan and Bearpaw stood there tensely while Dean sawed on the rope. As soon as it parted, Dean dropped the knife and shoved Tasman toward the revolver. As she stumbled forward, she seemed to accidentally thrust a leg behind her so that it went between his legs. Suddenly, their feet were tangled. He threw Tasman aside and lunged for the gun. Morgan knew he couldn't beat the outlaw to the Colt, but the knife was closer, so he made a dive for it. His fingers wrapped around the handle just as Dean snatched up the gun. Dean wheeled around as Morgan scrambled to his feet. They were still too far apart. Morgan couldn't reach him with the knife. Bearpaw leaped between them. The bullet struck the Paiute in the body and spun him around. He had occupied Dean's attention for only a second. Enough time for Morgan to leap forward and slam the blade into Dean's chest. Dean took a step back and fumbled at the handle of the knife protruding from his chest. Morgan hit him hard with a right to the jaw. Dean went down, and the gun flew out of his hand. He spasmed as he tried to pull the blade out of his body, but then he went limp, his hands falling away from the knife. Seeing that Dean was dead, Morgan whirled around and ran to Bearpaw's side. The Paiute had fallen on the snowy ground, which was now speckled with crimson droplets in places. Morgan went to a knee and lifted Bearpaw's head.
How bad is it?
Bad enough to hurt like blazes.
You'll be fine. We'll get you to a doctor. Can't be much farther to Trinidad.
He fumbled with the buffalo robe and the shirt underneath it, finally pulling them aside so that he could see the wound. The bullet had ripped into Bearpaw's side and then torn out his back. Blood was everywhere. Morgan wasn't sure how serious the wound was. He told himself that Bearpaw would be all right. He had to be. Tasman knelt on Bearpaw's other side. She had removed the rope from her neck and seemed to be fine, except for a welt where the rope had scratched her skin.
How bad is it?
I don't know. Help me get something tied around these wounds.
They labored frantically for the next few minutes, tearing strips from a blanket and winding them tightly around Bearpaw's midsection after Morgan pressed more wads of cloth into the wounds to try to stop the bleeding. Then they lifted him into his saddle. Thankfully, Bearpaw roused enough to grab hold of the saddle horn with both hands and help keep himself mounted. Then Morgan and Tasman swung up into their saddles as well and set off for Trinidad with Bearpaw riding between them. None of them looked back at Abel Dean, who lay motionless in the snow behind them. The doctor, a tall, balding, raw-boned man, came out of his surgery rubbing his bloody hands on a rag. He gave an anxious Morgan and Tasman a nod.
Well, looks like you got him here in time. I got the bleeding stopped and cleaned out the wounds and stitched him up. He's got a good chance to pull through, but he'll be laid up for quite a while. Month, maybe.
Morgan thought back to what Dr. Patrick McNally had said about him, which was pretty much the same thing. He had beaten that prediction because he had the need for revenge driving him. Bearpaw didn't have to do that. The Paiute had helped Morgan this far. From here on out, the kid would go it alone. He turned to Tasman.
You'll stay here in Trinidad and make sure that he gets better.
But kid...
I owe my life to Philip.
Then why don't you stay here and take care of him?
Because there are still things I have to do. Things that won't wait. Tasman, I need you to do this. For him. And for me. I need to know that both of you are safe.
Well, you're off risking your life on some sort of vengeance quest?
Don't mind me. I think I'll go have a cup of coffee. Now, the two of you can hash out whatever you need to. Just, remember there'll be a bill for my services?
You'll get your money. I'll see to that.
The doctor nodded and went out, leaving Morgan and Tasman looking squarely at each other.
I'm not going to be able to budge you, am I?
I'm afraid not.
You know... most of the time, men do whatever I want. It's not fair that you're not like them. Who was she?
What do you mean?
The woman who left you in such pain?
She didn't leave me. She was taken from me.
By the men you're hunting down?
Morgan shrugged. Tasman reached out, rested a hand on the chest of the buckskin jacket Morgan wore.
I'll take care of Bearpaw. I'll see to it that the doctor does everything that needs to be done. What are you gonna do?
Morgan glanced at the window. Night had fallen outside. It had taken them most of the rest of the day to reach Trinidad, which at the moment was a picturesque little settlement with snow on the roofs of its buildings and the mountains looming up in the west.
It's too late to leave now. In the morning, I reckon I'll head for Blue Creek.
Where there are two more men you need to kill.
Morgan shrugged again. There was no need to put it into words. The doctor came back into the room, carrying a cup of coffee.
I had to give Mr. Bearpaw some laudanum, so he'll probably sleep the rest of the night. I'll keep an eye on him. You don't have to worry. You can both go have something to eat and get some rest. The Trinidad Hotel ought to have a room for you.
Neither Morgan nor Tasman corrected the doctor's assumption that they would need just one room.
I'll be back in the morning to check on him and help out any way I can.
Is there a Western Union office in town?
2 blocks down the street on the left.
Much obliged for everything.
Morgan had spotted a cafe, so he and Tasman stopped and had an actual meal, which tasted good after long days of making do on the trail. Then they went to the Trinidad Hotel, where Morgan rented 2 rooms and used most of the rest of his money to pay for a couple of weeks in advance on Tasman's room. He left Tasman at the hotel and later found the Western Union office and sent another telegram to Claudius Turnbuckle, asking that the lawyer arrange to pay for the doctor and any other expenses Tasman and Bearpaw might have. He wanted both of them to have money in the bank in Trinidad to take care of any emergencies, too. With that taken care of, he had returned to the hotel and stopped at the desk to get the key to room 7. Tasman was across the hall in room 8.
The young lady already took the key to your room, sir. She said she would take care of both of them.
Morgan hadn't told her to do that, but he supposed that no harm was done. He nodded his thanks and went upstairs. Pausing in front of Tasman's door, he knocked softly on it, intending to ask her for the key to his room. There was no answer.
Tasman?
Maybe she already was so sound asleep that she couldn't hear him, he thought. He turned and stepped across the hall to try the door to his room, hoping that she had unlocked it before turning in. He swung the door open and saw that the lamp on the table next to the bed was already burning with its flame turned low. The bed was occupied, too. Tasman sat there, with her back against a pillow propped between her and the headboard. She wore a simple white nightgown, and her dark hair was loose and flowing around her shoulders.
Oh, no.
Why not? It doesn't have to mean anything. I am just a whore after all.
Tears shone in her eyes as she spoke. Morgan stepped into the room and eased the door closed behind him.
I never thought you ought to... I mean, you don't have to feel any obligation to... Yeah, I never expected...
Shut up! We both need this.
Morgan shook his head. Maybe someday, but not now. Not yet.
I can't.
I'll bet you can, you just won't.
That's not true. I just can't be with any woman right now.
Until you finish killing the man who took the last woman from you.
If you must know, that's right. And maybe not even then. Maybe not ever.
Then for God's sake, at least tell me about it. Tell me the truth for a change, kid. If you don't, then I'll think it's just because I'm a cheap whore.
That's not true. I swear, Tasman, ever since I've gotten to know you, I never think of you that way. That's all in the past.
So you can put what I used to be behind you without any trouble, but you can't put your own past behind you, too?
Morgan just stared at her, unsure what to say. He didn't think anything would make a difference.
Did you ever stop to think that if you talked about it, it might be easier to let go?
I don't want to let go. Not yet. I need to hang on to the pain for now. It keeps me going. When I'm done with... what I have to do. Maybe then things will be different. Maybe I can start looking ahead again instead of looking back.
Tasman looked at him for a long moment.
You might as well go across the hall and get some sleep.
Relieved, he turned and reached for the doorknob.
You'll need to be well rested to do all that killing.
The log cabin sat against the snowy timbered slope of a hill. The little stream, known as Blue Creek, twisted along at the base of the hill. Morgan supposed that that was where the 2 men who occupied the cabin did their panning for gold. He saw an old-fashioned sluice box at the edge of the creek. The odds of them finding much dust like that, in this day and age, when modern mining methods had replaced those old ways, was mighty slim, Morgan thought, as he hunkered behind a boulder on the opposite slope and watched the place. A diehard prospector always had hope, though, even when he didn't have much of anything else. Smoke curled from the cabin's stone chimney. Both men were in there, Morgan knew. He had seen them moving around a short time earlier, right after he got here. They had tended to the horses in the little corral and shed out back, then gone into the cabin. It was late in the afternoon. They might not emerge again until the next morning. Morgan didn't intend to wait that long. It had taken him most of the day to get here from Trinidad. The clouds had finally broken up during the day, so the sun was shining brightly now as it dipped toward the peaks behind the cabin. With the weather clearing like that and the wind dying down, the night would be really cold. Morgan's eyes narrowed as he looked at the stack of firewood beside the cabin. Could be that one of the men would decide to bring in some more wood before nightfall, just so they'd have plenty. He began working his way toward the cabin, circling so that he could come in from that direction. If neither of them came out to fetch wood, he'd have to think of some other way to lure them out. He crossed the creek upstream, leaping from rock to rock in order to do so, then headed for the cabin. It didn't have any windows on this side, but Morgan used the trees for cover anyway. When he reached the cabin, he pressed his back to its rear wall, just around the corner from the stack of firewood. He could hear Rattigan and White Rock moving around inside, and the knowledge that he was this close to two or more of the men responsible for Rebel's death gnawed at his guts. He wanted to go around to the front of the cabin, kick the door open, and go in shooting. If it came down to it, that was exactly what he would do, but he hoped there would be a better way. The sun had touched the mountains to the west, and shadows had begun to gather, when Morgan heard the cabin door open. He slipped the Colt from its holster and waited, as one of the men came around the cabin to the stack of firewood. He waited until the man had gathered up several pieces of wood and turned back toward the front of the cabin before he sprang out of concealment and brought the Colt crashing down on the man's head. The man dropped the firewood and toppled forward.
White Rock, what was that racket? You all right out there?
White Rock wasn't going to answer. He was out cold. Morgan moved quickly past the unconscious half-breed. He reached the front corner of the cabin just as Rattigan came out the door, gun in hand. Morgan hesitated for a second as he saw how old Rattigan was. The man's face was lined and leathery, and the beard stubble dotting his angular jaw was pure white. For that second, Morgan was reminded of his grandfather, and his finger froze on the trigger. Then Rattigan's face twisted in an evil grimace, and flame erupted from the barrel of the gun in his hand. Morgan felt a tremendous impact on his left hip that slewed him around. Rattigan fired again. This slug burned past Morgan's ear, and he didn't waste any more time thinking about Rattigan's age. Old or not, the outlaw was as vicious and evil as any of the others Morgan had faced. Maybe more so, because he'd had more time to practice. Morgan snapped his gun up and triggered it. But his left leg folded up beneath him. Because he was falling, his aim was a little off. His bullet caught Rattigan in the left shoulder and had knocked the old man back a step. Rattigan kept his feet and hung onto his gun, though. He threw a third shot at Morgan. The bullet plowed into the snow-covered ground only inches away. The Colt bucked in Morgan's hand for a second time. This bullet punched into Rattigan's chest and knocked him down. When he tried to raise his gun, Morgan shot him again. Rattigan went over onto his back, the revolver slipping from his fingers as he slumped. Morgan rolled over, and he saw that White Rock had regained consciousness and was coming at him. A piece of firewood held high over his head.
You son of a bitch!
Morgan tipped up the barrel of the Colt and fired. The bullet struck White Rock in the throat and ripped through at an upward angle into his brain. The firewood slipped from his fingers and fell to the ground as White Rock pitched forward, landing on the crimson spray that had come from his ruined throat and stained the snow. Unable to stand because his left leg was still numb, Morgan scooted backward so that he could cover both men. He was pretty sure that Rattigan and White Rock were both dead, but injured as he was, he didn't want to take any chances. Neither man moved. Morgan could tell they weren't breathing anymore. He reached for the loops on his gun belt, intending to take some cartridges from them and reload.
Huh?
The belt was surprisingly loose around his hips, he discovered. He moved his hand to the place where he'd been hit, and found that the thick leather was torn almost completely apart. He didn't feel any blood, though, and after a second, he realized that Rattigan's bullet had hit the gun belt and glanced off, ruining the belt, but failing to penetrate Morgan's body. His leg had gone numb from the impact. That was all.
Whew!
Relief washed through him. He had worried that he might bleed to death out here, far from town. Now he knew that the numbness in his leg ought to wear off after a while. He'd be bruised and sore, but if the bullet hadn't broken any bones, he would be able to get back to Trinidad. Morgan reloaded the Colt, then untied the holster thong from his leg and took off the ruined gun belt. He tossed it aside and crawled over to the cabin, dragging his injured leg behind him. When he made it to the wall, he reached up with his free hand and found a good grip between a couple of the logs. He was able to pull himself up and lean against the cabin. As he did that, feeling began to come back into his leg. He waited until he trusted his muscles to obey him, then limped toward the door, which stood open. Rattigan hadn't closed it behind him before he started shooting. By the time Morgan made it to the door, he was confident that the bullet hadn't broken his hip. Everything seemed to be working, albeit painfully. He stepped inside and shoved the door closed to trap the heat from the fireplace. As he warmed up, the stiffness in his leg eased even more, although the place where the bullet had struck the gun belt was still very tender to the touch. A coffee pot was on the stove. Morgan found a cup on a crude shelf and filled it with the strong black brew, then sat down in a rough-hewn chair at an equally rough table to sip from the cup and rest his leg. After a while, he felt strong enough to limp outside and drag the bodies of Rattigan and White Rock around to the back of the cabin. He left them there and crossed the creek to head back up the hill to the place where he'd left his horse. The buckskin was still there. He tossed his head, obviously glad to see Morgan.
Sorry. Let's get you down to that shed.
By the time he'd finished tending to the horse, night had fallen. Morgan went inside, taking some firewood with him, and built up the blaze in the fireplace. The two outlaws had enough supplies on hand so that he was able to scrape together some supper without much trouble. Not wanting to use either of the bunks in the cabin where Rattigan and White Rock had slept, he had brought in his bedroll. Morgan spread it out in front of the fireplace and crawled into the blankets to sleep, using his saddle as a pillow. But between his painful hip and the knowledge that two dead men lay on the cold ground just on the other side of those logs, Morgan was a long time dozing off. He wouldn't have been surprised if wolves had dragged off the corpses during the night, but Rattigan and White Rock were still there the next morning. Morgan's hip and leg were pretty sore, but he was able to get around fairly well. He had hauled both bodies into the cabin, one at a time, and dumped them on the bunks. He planned to leave them there, a mystery for whoever stumbled on this cabin next. Although he didn't like stealing from the dead, he needed a new gun belt, and Rattigan wore one with a brown Buscadero-cut holster attached to it. Morgan took it off the body and tried it on. It fit fairly well around his lean hips. He slipped the Colt into the holster, worked it up and down a few times, and nodded in satisfaction. The belt and holster would do. He left the corral gate open as he rode away. The outlaws' horses would have to fend for themselves. If he showed up in Trinidad with a couple of extra horses, the law might start asking too many questions. It was late afternoon by the time he had reached the settlement. When he limped into the front room of the doctor's office, he found it empty, so he limped a little further to where Bearpaw was last. The Paiute was propped up in bed when Morgan came in.
Kid!
Tasman sat in a straight chair beside the bed. She looked at Morgan and smiled in relief, but didn't say anything.
You all right?
Bearpaw's grin disappeared and was replaced by a frown as Morgan limped across the room to get another chair and pull it up beside the bed.
I'm fine. A little gimpy, that's all.
That's a new gun belt you're wearing. A different one, anyway.
My old one got ruined.
By a bullet? What about Rattigan and White Rock?
We don't have to worry about them anymore.
Good. That just leaves the three down in Texas. As soon as I'm able to travel, we'll head down that way.
I'm going now. Well, first thing tomorrow, anyway.
By yourself? You don't need to do that, kid.
You're wasting your breath, Philip. He's as stubborn as a mule. He can barely walk, and he's talking about starting to Texas tomorrow.
I'm not going to walk there.
Yeah, but you don't need to take on those three by yourself. I ought to come with you.
The doctor said you'd be laid up for a month.
Patrick said the same thing about you. You were up and around in a couple of weeks.
I can't wait even that long. Laswell and Harker were going to take Moss home. There's no telling if they stayed there in Diabolito. I may have to track them somewhere else.
Bearpaw studied him intently for a moment.
You think you're ready to go it alone?
Went in alone yesterday. I'm still alive.
I suppose you're right about that. But Laswell's probably the most dangerous of the whole bunch. We don't really know about Harker and Moss.
Moss is crippled.
Doesn't mean he's not dangerous. A broken-backed rattler can still stick his fangs in you, kid.
Morgan didn't want to continue this argument. He leaned forward in his chair, squeezed Bearpaw's shoulder.
I'll see to it that all your expenses are taken care of while you recuperate, yours and Tasman's both. And I'll tell you who to wire in San Francisco if you ever need anything after that. When you're ready to travel, the two of you can head back to Sawtooth.
Morgan smiled at Tasman.
It's a good place to live. You'll be able to make a new life for yourself there.
Where no one will know I used to be a whore.
Everybody can use a fresh start now and then, I reckon.
What about you, kid? When does your fresh start come along?
Not yet.
Morgan couldn't stop thinking about Clay Laswell, Ezra Harker, and Vernon Moss.
Not yet.
He stood. Bearpaw held up a hand.
I want you to take my sharps with you. One of these days you'll need to make a long shot. You won't find a sweeter rifle for it than that one.
The sharps is yours.
That's right. So it's mine to give away if I want to. Take it, kid. Otherwise, I might just have to follow you to Texas.
I'll buy a wagon. We can load you in it and probably travel now.
The hell with that. You try something crazy like that and it's liable to kill you, Philip.
Then take the sharps and make an old loco redskin feel better.
All right. If it'll help, I'll take the sharps. Between that and the Winchester and my Colt, reckon I'll be armed for bear.
My knife, too. I want you to have it.
All right.
You better come to see me in the morning before you ride out.
I can do that. As long as you promise not to give me any more trouble.
Trouble? More often than not, I'm the one who saved you from trouble.
No argument there. I owe you my life several times over.
He left the room, and Tasman followed him onto the porch. It had warmed up quite a bit during the day, and some of the snow had melted. The rest of it would be gone in another day or two, Morgan thought.
Are you really all right?
I'm fine. My hip is bruised, but that's all.
And it'll probably be healed up by the time you reach the Rio Grande.
I'm counting on that.
She folded her arms across her chest.
Did you ever stop to think that all this you're doing won't bring her back, kid?
Every day of my life.
Texas was a far cry from Colorado in more ways than one. Over the course of several weeks, Morgan had traveled more than 1,000 miles from those snow-dappled mountains to this hot, dry, dusty plain along the Rio Grande. Though autumn storms continued to bring snow and cold winds to more northern climes, weather like that seldom penetrated to this chaparral-covered border country southeast of Laredo. If everything he had learned since leaving Colorado was correct, the border village of Diablito was now only a mile or two ahead of him. His journey was almost at an end. That was the good news. The bad news was that two men were following him. Morgan had no idea who they were, but they had been back there for a couple of days, never coming too close, always staying far enough back to keep him in sight without crowding him. Bearpaw had taught him to watch his back trail, and that lesson was paying off now. Morgan thought about trying to set up an ambush for the men following him, but he had decided that as long as they didn't make a move against him, he would press on toward his destination. They had to have a reason for dogging his trail. And maybe he would find out what it was once he reached Diablito. In the meantime, and without taking his attention off what was in front of him and behind him, a portion of his thoughts drifted back to Trinidad. He would never forget the look on Bearpaw's face as he gripped the Paiute's hand and bade him farewell. Frank Morgan was his father, and the kid had come to accept that. But Bearpaw was like the uncle he'd never had. Nor would he forget the sadness in Tasman's dark eyes as she stood there on the front porch of the doctor's house, a shawl around her shoulders, her dark hair blowing in the wind. When they were standing there together on the porch, before he mounted up and rode away, she had made a move like she was about to kiss him, then stopped abruptly as if realizing that it wouldn't do any good. It would just deepen the pain for both of them.
Life is damned bad timing, doesn't it?
Morgan thought about how things might have been different, first with Eve McNally, then with Tasman, and knew that was true. Life had damned bad timing, and there wasn't a thing anybody could do about it. Nothing except ride on and look to the future, not the past. That is, as soon as the past was laid to rest. Vernon Moss wheeled himself toward the open door. He didn't figure he would ever get used to this damn chair. He was starting to think the agony from his crushed legs would never fade either. But it wasn't quite as bad when he could sit outside in the shade of the vine-covered porch. There might be a little breeze, and maybe the young Mexican girl he paid to take care of the place would rub his useless legs through the blanket that was spread over them. Sometimes that made them feel better. Moss was still several feet away from the door when the tall figure of a man appeared in it, dark and featureless against the bright sunlight outside.
Who the hell are you?
I'm looking for Vernon Moss.
Well, you found him. Or what's left of him.
Where are Clay and Ezra?
The stranger sounded like he knew them. It was hard for Moss to think because of the pain in his legs.
They've gone down to the cantina. They'll be back in a little while. You used to ride with them or something?
It struck Moss as something that might have come from an open grave. He didn't know why that bizarre thought passed through his mind, but it made him shiver.
Started in a cantina, now it's going to end in one.
Moss slipped a hand under the blanket.
Damn it, mister, I want to know who you are.
You don't remember me? From Black Rock Canyon?
The stranger moved a step into the room so that Moss could see him a little better. Moss recognized his face, just like he recognized the reference to Black Rock Canyon. He would never forget that night, or the face of the man who had run him down with that buggy and crippled him for life. Moss jerked the pistol from under the blanket.
Damn you!
Moss felt a giant fist punch him in the chest. Many's the time he had thought about taking that gun and putting the barrel in his mouth or pressing it to his temple and then pulling the trigger to put himself out of his helpless misery. But in the end, he hadn't been able to do it. He'd been too gutless.
Thank you.
Those words, and the sudden pound of hoofbeats, were the last things Vernon Moss heard on this earth. Morgan whirled around as he heard the horses coming up fast behind him. Just as he had expected, the shots had drawn the men who had been following him into the open, so he wasn't surprised to see the two riders galloping toward him. He was shocked, though, that he recognized them, and they were two of the last people he would have expected to see here in this sleepy border village. One was tall and lanky, with a thatch of dark hair under his Stetson. The other was shorter and stockier, with a round face and sandy hair. Despite those obvious differences, they bore a distinct resemblance to each other and to Morgan's late wife. They were Rebel's brothers, Tom and Bob Callahan. As surprised as Morgan was to see them, they appeared to be even more shocked to recognize him as they reined their horses to sliding halts. Bob Callahan was the first one to speak.
Conrad!
Even in the gunfighter garb, they knew their brother-in-law. Morgan figured the fight wasn't over. Diablito was small enough so that Laswell and Harker would have heard those shots and might come to investigate. He replaced the spent cartridge in the Colt and slid around into the normally empty sixth chamber. Then he snapped the cylinder closed.
What are you boys doing here?
We've been following you.
Tom swung down from the saddle. Beside him, Bob did likewise.
We picked up your trail in the Four Corners. We were looking for a bunch that kidnapped and killed Rebel. Figured if anybody was going to settle that score for her, it'd have to be us. Since as far as we knew, you killed yourself in Carson City.
That's what everybody was supposed to think.
Then damn it, you're the mysterious gunfighter who's been killing off those bastards one by one?
We knew somebody else was after him. We figured it didn't have anything to do with what happened to Rebel.
It had everything to do with it, and it's not over.
The bullet impacted into the adobe wall of Moss's house. Morgan wheeled around and spotted Laswell and Harker splitting up, taking cover behind buildings on opposite sides of the street as they continued throwing lead at Morgan and the Callahan brothers.
Hunt some cover!
Morgan triggered a shot back at Laswell and Harker and ducked behind a corner of the adobe shack. Yeah! Tom and Bob slapped their horses on the rump and sent the animals running out of the line of fire as they scurried for cover of their own. Slugs kicked up dust around their feet, but they made it to safety, Bob behind the house across the street, Tom behind a shed. Laswell and Harker must have moseyed out of the cantina to see what the shooting was about, noticed the three men standing in front of Moss's shack, and figured that trouble had caught up to them at last. Now it was going to be a cat-and-mouse game, the two outlaws against Morgan and his unexpected allies. Morgan had his enemies outnumbered for a change. He wasn't sure he liked that. He had placed Bearpaw in danger, and the Paiute had paid the price. Tasman had come close to dying, too. Morgan didn't want anything to happen to Tom and Bob. They had already suffered enough, losing their sister like that. But he also knew that the Callahan brothers were tough, seasoned hombres who had been in more than one fight. He caught Bob's eye across the street and gestured to him, signaling that he was going to work around behind the buildings and try to get the drop on Laswell. Bob nodded and motioned that he and Tom would do the same with Harker. As Morgan moved in a crouching run behind the buildings, he hoped that the people who lived here in Diablito would keep their heads down while this little war was going on. He didn't want any other innocents getting hurt. The guns had fallen silent for the moment while everyone jockeyed for position. Morgan moved carefully, using every bit of cover he could find and darting across the open areas as fast as he could. Sweat trickled down his back. His heart pounded, either from nerves or from anticipation that his long quest would soon be over, or both. He jerked a little as shots from across the street suddenly shattered the tense silence.
Tom!
Morgan's jaw clenched. Tom must be hit, he thought. He dashed up a narrow alley between two buildings and reached the street in time to see Ezra Harker drawing a bead on Bob as Bob tried to drag his wounded brother to safety.
Harker!
The outlaw whirled toward him, but Kid Morgan had the bead on him first. Harker staggered but didn't go down. Harker fired, sending shards of adobe flying as the bullet struck the corner of the house next to Morgan. The next second, Harker was riddled with lead as Morgan fired three more times, and both Callahan brothers blazed away at him too, even the wounded Tom, who lay propped up on one elbow as he fired with his other hand. Parker went backward in a macabre dance with blood exploding from him as the bullets ripped through him. There was an eerie silence that fell upon the town.
That's six. You gotta be empty.
Lasswell didn't realize he had replaced the bullet he'd used to kill Moss, Morgan thought, as he stiffened. The gunman didn't know that there was still one round in the Colt.
Turn around. I want to see who I'm about to kill.
Morgan let his arm sag to his side in an air of defeat. He turned slowly and faced Lasswell.
So you're the bastard who's been tracking down those fellas who rode with me. Oh yeah, I know about it. I heard through the grapevine about how you killed Baggett and Hooper and Buck and Julio and all the rest of them. What I want to know is why.
Take a good look at me, then you'll know.
Lasswell's eyes narrowed, then widened.
Browning, but you're supposed to be...
He didn't finish. He pulled the trigger instead. But even as Lasswell's finger closed on the trigger, Morgan's gun came up again with speed the likes of which he had never achieved before. So fast that it all seemed to happen in the same shaved heartbeat. Both Colts roared. Morgan felt the hot breath of a slug as it passed his ear. Lasswell was rocked back by Morgan's bullet driving into his body. Now Morgan's gun was really empty, and he couldn't defend himself if Lasswell got off another shot. But Lasswell didn't fire again. He staggered to the side, then dropped his gun and fell to his knees.
Wait, don't die yet!
Lasswell crumpled onto his left side. Morgan dropped to his knees as well and grabbed Lasswell's shoulders.
Damn you, don't die! Who hired you to kill my wife? Tell me!
Blood dribbled from the corner of Lasswell's mouth as he looked up at Morgan.
You will never know.
Then his head drooped to the ground, and all the life went out of his body. Morgan looked up at the hot Texas sky.
No!
It wasn't over. Maybe it never would be. Four days later, wearing the fringed buckskin jacket against the dank, chilly wind coming off the Pacific, Kid Morgan walked through the San Francisco building that housed the offices of Turnbuckle and Stafford.
Mr. Turnbuckle is expecting you, Mr. Kid. He said to show you right into his office when you got here.
Thanks.
Morgan followed the man to a heavy door of polished engraved wood. The clerk swung it open, and Morgan stepped inside. He stopped short at the sight of the two men standing by the window. Claudius Turnbuckle was a stout, balding man with bushy eyebrows and mutton chop whiskers. Morgan expected to see him. It was the other man who came as a surprise.
Hello, Conrad.
The Drifter was a medium-sized, deceptively powerful man with graying dark hair. He wore range clothes and a holstered six-gun. He stepped forward, put his arms around his son, and gave him a hug that the kid returned awkwardly.
Claudius has just been telling me what you've gone through these past few months. I wish I'd found out sooner. I'd have given you a hand.
That's all right. I handled it.
At least, he'd handled it as much as he could, he thought.
I was up north in timber country. Claudius didn't know where to find me. I'm so sorry about Rebel. She was as fine a gal as anybody you'll ever see.
The kid nodded. The pain of his loss was still there inside him, as sharp as ever, but he had learned by now to keep it tamped down, to not acknowledge it unless he had to. That was the only way he could keep going. After the shootout in Diablito, he and the Callahan brothers had ridden to San Antonio, where a real doctor took over caring for the wounded Tom Callahan. Morgan had patched him up as best he could, and the Sawbones said that Tom ought to be all right. Then Morgan had sent a wire to Turnbuckle, letting him know what had happened, and gotten a speedy message in return, asking him to come to San Francisco as soon as possible. He'd been able to catch a westbound Southern Pacific train in San Antonio, and now he was here in San Francisco, reunited with his father.
I have a particularly good bottle of brandy I've been saving. I'll break it out, and then we can all sit down, and you can tell us what you've been doing, Conrad.
We already know some of what he's been doing, raising hell from here to Texas. I have to say, Conrad, I knew you'd change tonight, but...
Frank looked the kid over.
Maybe not this much.
As glad as he was to see his father, Morgan wasn't in any mood to sit around and reminisce. He still had things to do. But he supposed he owed Frank and Turnbuckle an explanation, so he took off his hat and sat down as the lawyer suggested, accepted a snifter of brandy, and launched into a recitation of everything that had happened in the past few months. It was a dark and bloody tale, and that was reflected in the faces of Frank and Turnbuckle.
Is Tom gonna be all right?
I think so.
What about that fella Bearpaw?
I've already sent a wire to Tasman and gotten one back from her saying that they're fine. They're still in Trinidad, but they'll be starting back to Nevada soon. She wants me to visit them in Sawtooth, but I doubt if I ever will. I still have things to do.
Returning to take over the management of the Browning financial interests, you mean?
No. Those days are over. Too much has happened for things to ever go back to the way they were before.
But surely you don't intend to continue with this...
He waved at the kid's fringed jacket and the Buscadero gun belt and holster.
Masquerade?
It's not a masquerade anymore. I'm Kid Morgan now. I might have one more use for Conrad Browning, though.
To help find out who hired Laswell to kill Rebel and put you through hell.
That's right. Whoever sicked Laswell and his bunch on me has a grudge against Conrad, not Kid Morgan. So if I'm going to draw the bastard out, Conrad has to live again. The Callahan boys told me that Rebel is buried in New Mexico, down close to where she and I first met.
Kid Morgan stood up and nodded to Frank and Turnbuckle.
It's time for Conrad Browning to pay a visit to his wife's grave.
The Loner Book One, The Loner, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2009, J.A. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2011, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Eric Messner, Thomas Keegan, Kimberly Gilbert, Yasmin Twazon, Dylan Lynch, Mort Shelby, Stephen Carpenter, Joe Brack, Andy Clements, Michael Glenn, Ren Casey, Thomas Penny, Ken Jackson, Scott McCormick, Terence Aselford, James Konacek, Richard Rowan, Johan Detweiler, Drew Kopis, Tony Nam, James Lewis, James Keegan, Joseph Thornhill, Colleen Delaney, Nanette Savard, Elizabeth Jernigan, David Coyne, and MJ Casey. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Adapted for graphic audio and directed by Nathaniel Perry. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry. The Loner theme was composed by Nathaniel Perry. Additional original music by Johan Detweiler and Nathaniel Perry. If you enjoyed The Loner, be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The Last Gunfighter, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our action-pumped titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Keep listening for a preview of another graphic audio title.
Lucky you, Danny. You've got an admirer or two. Or 100.
I just blew into town and already people want to kill me.
Not kill. Capture. Alive and unharmed.
This is my hunt. You are not taking over. Is that clear?
If she is harmed, I will kill all in my path.
So what's this grand idea of yours?
You may not like it.
Does it give me a better chance of killing Santino?
It does. Yet, you do not trust me, Dante.
I don't trust anyone, not until proven. My jury's still out until you tell me this idea.
Very well. I would wish to give you a gift, a piece of my power. It will make you stronger, faster, less easy to damage.
What's the catch?
I am not sure you would wish to be tied to me so closely. And the process is difficult for humans. Painful.
You would, what, make me into a demon?
Not a demon, my Hedera.
I've never heard of that.
It's not spoken of. It requires a physical bond.
You mean like tantric? Like sex magic?
Very similar.
Oh.
What?
My entire body burned, changing. I hate you. Change me back. I don't want this. Change me back.
I cannot. You have a demon to hunt, Dante.
Sentido!
I've come to kill you, you scavenger son of a bitch, for what you did to Doreen.
You can't kill me! Neither man nor demon can kill me! Lucifer assured me of that!
Don't miss Dante Valentine, Working for the Devil, Part 2. It's one hell of an adventure. And it's available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.